97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
Wiggins America.
I am not a number. I am a free man.
Wiggins America.
The only thing I'm going to need from you guys right now is a cup of coffee.
Wiggins.
Today's global economy waits for no man.
America.
Today's global business climate is like,
whatever, dude.
Hey. Politics is a dirty game. I'm not sure we want to play.
There are forces here at work that you couldn't possibly understand.
You have no idea how high up this goes.
Welcome to Wiggins America.
I strongly believe psychologically we need two parties in this country. We don't just need the Republican Party. We just don't need the Democrats. We need two parties in this country, but they need to be real parties. And most of the Democrats I talk to tell me that they didn't leave the Democratic Party. They say the Democratic Party left them. They say it was hijacked by the extreme left liberals, that the fringe took over the party, and so it's not what they thought it was.
Thank you, Dr. Phil. I really appreciate you making that point for me. It was much easier to play your clip than to play my own clip from earlier in the week when I had made a similar point. Without knowing that Dr. Phil had also made this point, I guess independent people are coming to independent conclusions and sometimes they match up. And today's was Dr. Phil's matching up with me on Wiggins America. I think he's got a little bit bigger platform than I do, but I'd like to talk about this subject. Thank you for tuning in to Wiggins America this weekend. Lots to talk about, as usual. Let's start with that one, that there is no actual party on the left anymore. It's difficult to have debate in this country between the right and the left because the left positions aren't really debatable. They're not engaging in real discussion. I think there probably are people who are attempting to, you know, like Bill Maher, for instance, is having people on his show from both sides of the aisle and having real discussions with them. Joe Rogan is actually trying to do that. He can't get a lot of leftists, but he had Bernie on. And, you know, that's where the pushback happens. Now, the converse is very true. Right-wing people and politicians, J.D. Vance, Stephen Miller, Donald Trump, whoever, Carolyn Leavitt, they're willing to go on to leftist platforms all the time, and they do. CNN, I mean, you can go wherever. But the inverse is really not very true. So I do applaud people like, and Rogan's probably not part of that category anymore because he has shifted to the Republican side without really realizing it. Bill Maher has not, but even he said this week, you know, I'm kind of almost to the point where maybe I might ever, you know, in the future, if things continue this way, I might vote Republican. I think he was kidding, and he resorts to kidding a lot when he gets to serious arguments, which is a tactic. But at least he's attempting it. But he's really one of the only ones that I know of that's doing this, at least with a large platform. And I'm looking to the left in the midst of discussing war. There is a lot of debate going on in this country about whether we should have intervened in Iran on behalf of Israel, on behalf of the United States. Is it on behalf of the United States? Should we intervene in these things at all? Definitely should we be involved in regime change and all that. And Lindsey Graham is on one extreme, the Republican Party, and then you have other people like the Hodge twins and Matt Walsh and complete non-interventionalist Thomas Massie, maybe, although he's got his own agenda. Who are saying, no, we should never be involved in this stuff unless it directly affects us, and even then, very limited. And so there's this big debate happening, but the problem is that debate is happening almost entirely on the right. So Dr. Phil is correct in saying that there is no real debate happening in this country. But he's wrong because there is debate. It's just within the Republican side of things. That is a little bit unfortunate, though, because it used to be that that was the push and the pull, the tug of war between D and R that used to happen. But I ask you now, who are the voices on the left that you listen to in a time like this to just say, okay, what does the left think about this? Because I want to open up my mind. I want to make sure that I'm not living in a bubble. I want to hear what the left is saying intelligently about war. And not just right now, because there are great communicators who can come up with great ways of talking about things in the moment. But where have they been on this subject for quite a while now? And I really can't find anybody on the left who's been full war hawk the whole time, no matter what the administration, or full isolationist the whole time, no matter what the administration. They just kind of float with whoever's in power. So now they're anti-war. It's like this big we're against war. But where were you for 4 years with Biden? You weren't saying no war at all. You were like Slava Ukraine, you know, let's go. Let's fund the war. And so I'm looking to people online who are the big voices. Who can I try to turn to? Now, maybe this isn't the right guy, but I pulled up a tweet from Keith Olbermann because it stood out to me in the midst of this thought conversation I'm having with myself. And I really I know how the right views Keith Olbermann. I don't know how the left views him. Maybe he's like the most passionate voice for the far left, and he's great, and he's like an AOC, Jasmine Crockett. Like, yeah, get those guys out there. But maybe there's another faction of the Democrats that don't like him. I don't really know. But his tweet said this in the midst of me putting together this thought excursion. Trump has to be out of office today. No more of this deranged, enraged, stupid old man who thinks the world is only about him. He is a manifest threat to humanity. Now, maybe he's too extreme, and I shouldn't take the word of Keith Olbermann as like the voice of Democrats, but I really don't know who that person is. I mean, is it Bernie, or is it Adam Schiff? Or is it influencers that are paid on Twitter? I mean, I really don't know who this is. Is it Obama still? He talks once in a while, but not a lot. So I found Tom Morello. I was looking for somebody who's not really paid to be in that world. Like, they make their living completely separate from their politics. Because a lot of people, they're going to say the same things because that's how they make money. But Tom Morello doesn't need it. He's the guitarist from Rage Against the Machine, very wealthy. But he's an avowed leftist and has been for a long time. Like, he's an avowed socialist, actually, maybe even communist. I think he would say communist. So, okay, I'm going to look to this guy who's been consistent anyway. And he posts a picture of himself that just says, deport racists. It's a picture of himself holding a sign that says, deport racists, in the middle of the deportation, in the middle of the immigration, illegal immigration conversation that the country is having. So that argument, almost aside, that the argument that he's making is that I guess we shouldn't deport anybody if they're not white. I mean, I don't really know. Like, you can't deport people because of their skin color, not their immigration status, but just because of their skin color. Like, that is a terrible argument. It makes no sense. And then he says in the post itself, surely we can agree on this, the picture of himself holding the sign. But if you are a racist blank, please post a negative reply in the comments. Thank you. So also, not only do you have to agree with this, but if you post anything disagreeing with this, you are a racist blank. So that it's shutting down debate even before the debate happens. So you can't disagree with him because he's already said, well, if you do, you're racist. I mean, that's such a lazy argument. But that's a lot of the left. And it really bothers me that we're having this national debate, and it really is just within the Republican Party. And it's not just on war. It's not just, are you a part of the isolationist wing of the Republicans? Are you part of the interventionist, you know, kind of the war hawk side? Are you somewhere in the middle? It's also applying to things like the budget, you know, the big, beautiful bill. You have this national debate happening, but it's just within the Republican side. And part of that's probably that the Republicans can do this bill without Democrats. But you have different factions within Republicans saying the absolute point here is that we have to balance the budget. Not that we have to get out of even the national debt, but we have to stop creating more debt. We're Republicans. We're conservatives. Why aren't I talking about this? That's my position. if you couldn't tell. And then you have the other side that says, yeah, but Trump's agenda is too important. We have to pass Trump's agenda right now, which is going to cost a little bit more. Now, overall, they are cutting the budget, so you're adding less to the deficit than you were. So that's like a sort of a backhanded win. But at the same time, you're still adding to the deficit. But we got to pass Trump's agenda because the country is at stake right now. We're at such a tipping point. And, there's arguments to be made on both sides there, and I understand that. But that, again, that real debate, which is a good debate, is happening inside just the right. Where's the left on this? It's just, I'll read Keith Olbermann again. No more deranged, enraged, stupid old man who thinks the world's about him. He's a manifest threat to humanity. There's no debate happening there on the left. You already know what, there's just knee-jerk against anything Trump does. And if this is an example, I'm looking to try to find again, what's the left voice that's kind of the hey, look at me, we're actually not all crazy voice here. Who is this person? And I want to listen to them. I want to have this debate. Like, where have you been? Who are you? And unfortunately, if you look to some of the biggest voices still, like daytime TV, what's the number one show? Well, one of the number one shows on daytime TV, it's still The View. That just says how much daytime TV sucks. But The View is still one of, if not the top rated show in daytime TV. And it's all leftist opinions. And I did find this clip of, this is like the left debating with the left. So I'll give them, I guess, credit there.
Just remember, too, the Iranians literally throw gay people off of buildings. They don't adhere to basic human
rights.
Listen,
here's the thing. Let's not do that, because if we start with that, we have been known in this country to tie gay folks to the car.
Where the Iranian regime is today, they used to just keep hanging
black people. So
it is not even the same. I couldn't step over this. That's not what you mean to say.
It is the same.
No, it's not. The year 2025 in the United States is nothing like if I step foot wearing this outfit in Toronto.
I'm sorry.
I can't have my hair showing. I can't wear a skirt. I can't have my arms out.
I'm telling you, I literally said it was up to the Iranian people. Yes,
it is up to
and
them.
And that's why I am saying that it is the same. Murdering someone for their difference is not good, whoever does it. It's not good. So that's why I said you weren't saying what I heard was not what you meant.
I think it's very different to live in the United States in 2025 than it is to live in Iran.
Not if you're black.
Not for everybody.
Not if you're black.
Guys, don't go to Toronto.
The debate here, of course, though, when I give them credit for having a debate, their debate on the left of this prominent TV show is whether America is as bad as Iran. I mean, really? Like, that's the debate you want to have? I guess it's good that somebody is on your side is saying America is not as bad as Iran. But the most prominent voice in the show, Whoopi Goldberg, ends that clip by saying, well, if you're black in America, that's as bad as being a woman in Tehran. That's crazy. So it's a disappointing place to be. Back to the original Dr. Phil clip. We actually really do need two vibrant voices in this country with the push and pull. It's just that shifted so far to where the debate is really not happening between parties anymore at all. It is happening intra-party, and that's probably still good, but we got to get back to the place where there's some inter-party dialogue in America and not just screaming. And I really hope, I'll conclude by saying this, I really hope that maybe as we defund some of these NGOs, the super far left faction of the Democrat Party starts to drop off because their funding goes away. And that's very real. That very real really could be happening within the next couple of years. They still got money now, but it's going to be falling off. That you start to see some of that disappear. We start to have a dialogue again. Love to see that. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Wiggins America.
ये नहीं है कि मैं क्या बनूंगा, बात ये है कि मैं क्या करूंगा हमारे कम्युनिटीज के लिए और हर एक न्यूयॉर्कर के लिए। मैं हमारे शहर को अफोर्डेबल बनाऊंगा। न्यूयॉर्कर्स मुश्किल से अफोर्ड कर रहे हैं रोटी, कपड़ा और मकान। मैं ये सब बदलने के लिए लड़ रहा हूँ, रेंट फ्रीज, फ्री बसेस, यूनिवर्सल चाइल्ड केयर और सस्ती ग्रोसरीज के जरिए। पर आपको एक सवाल पूछना चाहता हूँ, तुमने कभी किसी को वोट किया?
I hear a lot of people after Zohran Mamdani has won the primary for New York City mayor saying they're erasing our culture. And I don't know that that's really the best way to put it. I understand the sentiment. You just heard an entire ad for New York City mayor in a different language. So obviously that's a different culture. You know, if you're an American, you speak English. That's part of culture. I hate to tell you that, but it's true. Sorry if you're offended by that, but American culture is predicated mostly on English. Doesn't mean you can't live in America and speak a different language. It just means if you want to be a part of the culture, you got to be able to talk to people. So he is speaking a different language to a different group of people in New York City, and that is causing a lot of alarm for people who say, look, I'm an American. I can't even hear what the guy's saying in the advertisement, and I'm supposed to vote on this? I very much understand that. I think the best way to put it is not they're replacing our culture. It's that American culture is just sort of being diminished for something else. Whether that something else is good or bad is the debate, and you can talk about that separately. But America has a culture, and it's like the left specifically thinks that everything about that culture needs to be secondary. And I don't really understand why that is. I don't understand why you would vote for that, because it's unclear what the replacement is. You know, a lot of people are saying, well, it's going to be Islam and all this, and it could be, but it's not really clear what the replacement of American culture will be. It's just the diminishing of American culture and saying, well, that's very secondary. It's bad. We need to do something else. Well, what do you want to do that's better? Well, I don't really know. I'm just going to replace it with something. And that's what I don't like. That's what makes me uncomfortable. A completely different angle on the Zohran Mamdani. He's not the mayor yet. Look, let's hold our horses here, because Eric Adams still has a chance to win as an independent. There's not going to be a Republican. Let's not assume that this super far-left socialist communist is going to win. But one more point about it before I move on. Do you realize that in that ad, you can hear some American words like rent controls and socializing grocery stores, basically. A couple other things that he says in there that are aimed at the cost of housing is one, that are aimed at people who can't afford things. So you're really... You're predicating a lot of your policies on helping, if not the poor, at least the non-wealthy. And when you look at who voted for Zohran Mamdani in the primary, it was the wealthy. All of the poor they consider in New York City to be poor under $50,000. That's very different than the Midwest. But under $50,000 in New York City, they overwhelmingly voted for Andrew Cuomo. So basically the wealthy, maybe white, liberal elitists thought, well, I'm going to help the poor. And the poor said, we don't want that. It's so indicative of where we are in America, of this sort of the elite class and the poor class and the divide that's happening between them, especially on the left. It's very, very interesting. But again, that's not even the point I'm trying to make in this short segment here about the New York City mayor, which doesn't really directly affect us, and I'm very glad about that. But I live in Illinois, so whatever happens on the coast tends to bleed its way into Chicago politics, which then is filtered downstream to me in downstate Illinois. But the interesting thing that's happening is also a lot of people on the right especially are saying, look, they're going to vote for these awful things, and they're just going to have to take their medicine. And that means that crime, I mean, this guy has proposed that it's not even like a defund the police. It's more like refund social activists who are going to counsel people out of crime. And we've heard this before. We've been down this road. It just doesn't work. But that's his proposal. And so crime's going to take off in New York City again. And that's the only thing Eric Adams has run on as that sounds vaguely Republican is crime. That's how he won the last time. So he could still win. But the other stuff that this guy is proposing, socializing food and stuff, you know, it costs a lot of money. And New York City, people are saying on the right, we'll just let them bleed, let them take their medicine they voted for, let them see it, and then they'll vote against it. The problem is that's not really happening. Across America, when people are voting for further and further leftist policies, they are experiencing the negativity of those things. Look at Brandon Johnson in New York. He's even further left than Lori Lightfoot. His approval rating is like 6%. And yet, they keep moving further and further left. Well, part of the reason for that is, and here's the kind of the big thesis here, that because of migration, intra-country migration, mind you, because of people in blue states and blue cities who have a kind of a independent middle to right lean, they're moving out of those areas. Well, that means that those areas are becoming bluer, and they're looking at the problems through the same lens and going, well, we just didn't socialism hard enough. And so they're going in further. But the overall gain there for the country, now if you live in one of those areas, that's terrible. But the overall gain is that nationally, Republicans are actually doing better and better in elections because the redistricting, the moving of population to more red areas, red states, means that there's going to be more and more representation as long as you decrease the amount of illegals in that representation, which is happening very slowly. So, I guess there's a lot of convoluted points here in this one segment, but my big takeaway is remember the people moving out of blue states. You know, we talk about, well, if you come to Texas, keep your liberal policies. Well, they are. That's actually happening. Data shows that when people move out of blue areas, they're typically not taking their politics with them. It's the red areas that are gaining red voters, and blue areas are becoming more blue, but they're also becoming smaller. Okay. All right. So that was me on a soapbox. Let me get back and focus in a little bit on how this districting is going to affect the next election. If you want to talk some numbers, I love talking numbers. So let's talk some numbers coming out of three states that might affect the midterms next year. Wisconsin, and I have some election predictions there that I get to say, haha, told you so about. And then Texas and Ohio. How are those three states related as far as the midterms? I will show you next. Again, major Supreme Court news. As of Friday, they upheld parental rights in the classroom, that parents can take their kids out of curriculum designed to basically indoctrinate them into LGBTQ religion. So the Supreme Court said, yeah, the parents can absolutely take them out when you are teaching that stuff. The argument against it is unbelievable, that we're going to teach your kids about gay sex and relationships and stuff, transgenderism and all this stuff, and you can't do anything about it. That's the left's argument here. Isn't that insane? I can't believe this had to get to the Supreme Court. They made the right decision. That's good. And of course, no nationwide injunctions anymore from the district courts on President Trump's agenda. I'll say this, the one thing I keep saying, I'm not going to talk about this. Now here we're talking about it. But the one thing that worries me is that then down the line, if a Democrat president gets in, they would just enact like insane stuff and you wouldn't really be able to do anything about it. But that's not true. The Supreme Court still can step into these things. It's just that the district court and the district courts, you can still sue, but you can't issue a nationwide injunction on anything you want that comes into your court about whatever you want, because that's just creating 96 little presidents that can do whatever they want. The court has said now that they can still rule on those things, but they would only apply to their district, not nationally, which is, I mean, why wouldn't that make sense? You do concern yourself with the idea that a really crazy AOC president could get in there and just go nuts. but you still have a check and balance there. It's not as if it's completely gone. And guess who's used this more than anybody else? Well, Democrats. In fact, it's only five district court judges out of the 96 that have issued basically 90% of all these nationwide injunctions against Trump. And you've seen the graphic probably on Fox News by now that roughly, I think it was 60 in his first term and now 40 in his second term, were like 5 months in. So it's been abused comparatively to Biden and Obama and Bush combined. I think all of them, all of those presidencies, all 8 years, 8 years, 4 years of them, there were a total of less than 40 that Trump's had in 5 months. So clearly the left is abusing this. And so why wouldn't you want to stop that? And the judges said this is the constitutional way. We're not sure why it got out of hand like this, but now that it's gotten here, we're telling you smack down, this is what the Constitution has implied is the way to do it. And that's actually why you have a Supreme Court in a lot of ways. So anyway, that all in the rearview mirror. Looking forward, as I said, we were going to. Remember when I did a prediction on the Supreme Court in Wisconsin, that race that was going on? I think it was April, not too long ago. It was Brad Schmiel was the Republican, and I think the Democrat's name was Susan Crawford. I have to check that. But Democrat, Republican, and Republicans were putting a lot of money and energy into that race because it's Wisconsin. It's a very swing state. It's a very winnable seat. In the past, though, Republicans had not done well in those Supreme Court races for some reason. Don't know why. But they were putting all kinds of attention and energy and money into that race in April. And I came out with my predictions, as I do, and said, look, Republicans really are not going to win this. They don't really have a chance here. Based on polling, data, early voting, all the stuff I normally use, I said, Republicans are not going to win this. Despite all the attention and the money, it's really not going to change much. And it didn't. So, again, I was right about that. And I only point that out because my track record is basically flawless, and I think you can trust my data analysis. That's all I'm saying. Going forward, so when we go into these things and I make a prediction, I'm not saying I will never get one wrong, but so far I haven't in 3 years. And that's picking just tough races, too. It's not picking easy ones. So all that to say that people were really worried at the time that if the Supreme Court swung now one seat to the blue, which it did in Wisconsin, that they were going to address redistricting in Wisconsin. And it was going to cost Republicans two seats, most likely, in the House. And that's pretty major, considering there is barely a majority in the House. I said at the time, that's possible, but I don't think it's a slam dunk. The fear-mongering about that is a little extreme, and it's probably, I'd say maybe it's a coin flip that it happens, but it's not a guarantee that it happens. Well, just this week, let me read this to you. Liberal Wisconsin Supreme Court decides not to redraw the congressional map ahead of the 2026 midterms to benefit Democrats. Doesn't mean it can't happen afterwards, but they've decided not to take any cases on this subject before the 2026 midterms. They have rejected hearing a lawsuit brought by prominent Democrat lawyer Mark Elias. Have you heard that name before? I mean, he's just an activist. So the whole point was to redraw the lines. That could have been horrible for Republicans. In 2025, the Supreme Court election, Susan Crawford won and vowed to make this happen, but she has not taken office yet. So the right now split Supreme Court has basically made this impossible to happen before the midterms. Doesn't mean it won't happen, just means that it's not right now. Now, what does that mean? Well, it means everything basically stays the same, except here's the big news. Texas and Ohio are most likely, well, not most likely, they're looking at redistricting those states, and those are Republican majority states. If they do, the estimate is that Republicans would gain seven seats in the House. And a lot of people are very, very excited about this. But let me urge caution here, too. I do not believe that this is another issue that they're going to take up before the 2026 midterms. I could be wrong. Maybe Ohio does it. Maybe Texas does it. I doubt both of them do it. If either one of them does it, I would say it's probably Texas. Ohio is probably not quite as red as Texas is. And just because it's a Republican state doesn't mean that you're going to get everything you want, i.e. Missouri. Missouri is super country club Republican state at the local level anyway. So is Georgia. So, Florida, Texas, yeah, they're a little more radical. It could happen, but I'm not going to hold my breath and wait to see if it does happen. We really goofed around a lot in this show, have we? Well, we're not going to change that here. I don't have anything goofy to report on. I will tell you that, just a reminder, that on July 4th, that is coming up, well, it's this week technically now, less than 7 days away, I am going to host the Music for Fireworks. So this is the fifth annual special on July 4th that we're doing. It starts at 8 o'clock, goes till 11 o'clock. So it encompasses pretty much before dark all the way through even the absolute longest fireworks display that you could possibly find for 4th of July. And it'll have music. It's got some old quotes and cartoons and patriotic stuff and funny stuff from movies. And just, it's all commercial free. And it is all July 4th night. And I love doing it. And I get to do it every year here on 97.1. I'm glad I get to do that. So that can be the soundtrack to your night, wherever you're going or whatever you're doing. But before we get to the end of the show here, while I would love to discuss a lot more about the Supreme Court rulings that came down on Friday that were major, major wins for the Trump administration, you always wonder what does it mean for a future administration? Because the rulings don't just affect Donald Trump. They affect presidents and nationwide injunctions being basically removed as a possibility from district court judges. that's huge for the next 3.5 years from getting Trump's agenda passed. Without going too far into that, which I would love to, what I really, really want to hit on here at the end of the show is still big, beautiful bill stuff, because as I've said before, this thing is way too big. It spends more than we make. So we're actually digging ourselves still deeper into debt by passing this thing. Now, but it's just like the same as any other bill, especially with spending. Democrats are going toward the cliff at 90 miles an hour. Republicans are going toward the cliff at 30, but they're still going toward the same cliff. They're just going a lot slower. So this reduces the amount added to the national debt significantly, but not enough. I mean, you have to at some point, we got to pay off this debt or just collapse. I mean, I don't know what it's going to take. Unfortunately, it's going to be pretty nasty because we're not ever dealing with it. Even a conservative Congress in both chambers is just not dealing. It's just not a priority. And that is so super, super sad that conservatives had just ceded even the idea of balancing a budget, let alone paying off national debt. We're going to just add to it just, I guess, forever till we die. And we'll all just collapse and the dollar will go into oblivion and we'll all go Mad Max. That's a little extreme, but the currency really is way, way, way more important than we're giving it credit for. But anyway, that's my biggest complaint about the big, beautiful bill. But the stuff in the bill I actually like, especially the House version, has, I would say, of the things that it's passing as far as Trump's agenda goes, they're really all good. But the new problem is not just, oh, but it still spends more than it brings in. The new problem is that the Senate parliamentarian, this term, Senate parliamentarian, has said that many things from the House version are not actually part of revenue reform or tax spending bill stuff. And so they have to be either adjusted or gotten rid of. And so a lot of the stuff from the House bill that's good has been removed by the Senate because of this random unelected person called the Senate parliamentarian. And this person has a lot of power, and people are pointing out she was put there by a Democrat. I guess it's an undetermined amount of time. She was put there by Harry Reid in 2012, I think. So she's been there for a long time. And I was really concerned that, you know, if they're trying to pass all this stuff and you have somebody, and it's just one person, I mean, it's just her opinion, saying, no, you can't do this, no, you can't do that, and I won't get into the specifics. I was really concerned that they were going to listen to her. And even Chip Roy has said, well, they're not actually, what they're doing is the Republicans who don't want to pass certain parts of this bill, I'm not going to call them rhinos, but they're doing rhino-y stuff, like in Republican in name only stuff. They're relying on the parliamentarian to remove things that they already don't like. And, you know, that's the claim by Chip Roy from the House. And I like Chip Roy, and so I listen to him quite a bit because I think he's reasonable. There's some grandstanders. He's not one of them. He'll actually negotiate on things. He's just a hardliner. But then Eric Schmidt, Senator Eric Schmidt from Missouri, came on to the Annie Frye show on Friday. And he was in the middle of these negotiations, which are still going on this weekend, and took time out of his schedule. I think he had just met with somebody very important. I think I know who it is, but I'm not going to say it just in case. Right before this, and called us to talk to you. And he explained where things are, and I thought it was very important to share that.
Basically, through the reconciliation process, it was legislation that was passed in the 70s. You're only supposed to be dealing with sort of budget items and tax policy. It's not really a policy thing. Like you're not allowed to have legislation in there like men playing in women's sports. Like that doesn't fit in a reconciliation bill. So the parliamentarian sort of makes some of those calls. I will say though that usually you can work around that. And like, for example, initially not allowing SNAP benefits for illegal immigrants was bounced. It was taken out. Well, there was a tweak of the language and now it's back in. So some of the stuff that's like popping up online or whatever, we should be able to work around that because, you know, when you're talking about Medicaid and you're talking about SNAP, the only people that are affected, and Democrats are trying to fearmonger on this, are, you know, if you're an able-bodied adult, we want to make sure you're working. And if you're an illegal immigrant, we want to make sure you're not getting any taxpayer benefits. Yeah. That's it. And so basically that's what Democrats are trying to make that seem worse than it is. But that's kind of where the sort of like in the bowels of the Senate where you're sort of arguing of what can stay in, what can stay out. And then we'll have it on the floor. Like that's the idea, is that over the weekend we would have it on the floor. There's something called a votorama, meaning after 20 hours of debate, it's unlimited amendments. And you just rifle through these things, and so you could have 10, you could have 20, you could have 50, you could have 100 amendments that are offered, and we'll vote through that and then ultimately get to final passage.
I trust what he's saying there as somebody who is all the way in on the process. It's not hearsay. It's not secondhand. He's there. And so this is what's going on. This is what he's dealing with. The Senate needs to remove more. I mean, I'm still going to stick by that. The Senate needs to remove more spending from this thing. It's probably not going to happen, and we probably will have a bill at some point. Then the House will have to grapple with it. So hopefully they're a part of this process over the weekend, too. I just don't really know how to frame it as a win when it's still spending more than we're making. We're adding more to the $37 trillion in debt that our country now has. These are the people that you elect that are supposed to stop that, and they're not. And not any one person could do it, but if enough of them formed a coalition, if Ron Johnson, along with Rand Paul, along with anybody else, including a Missouri senator, came together and said it is our priority that this has to be balanced budget, it still doesn't mean it would happen, but at least you'd have a coalition of three then, and right now they don't have that, and that's been my biggest complaint. Anyway, I think it's good to hear directly from the floor there. Appreciate Eric Schmidt doing that. This is Wiggins America, and we will see you next week.
Get more at 971talk.com.